You're listening to We Are STS. It's a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Are STS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is episode 14. Here in STS, we have lots of opportunities for students to gain real-world work experience. The STS Newsroom is one example. For 8 weeks, students work on communication projects for us. There's some journalism, some magazine building, and some podcast making. Today, you're going to hear one of the podcasts created this year from the STS Newsroom. This project was created by Sophia Sancho. Sophia just finished her undergraduate degree, a BSc Honors in Human Sciences. Sophia has been a familiar face around our program too, and we're really proud of her accomplishments. Sophia wanted to know more about company policies around the issue of menstrual leave. This is a topic of growing interest in every sector of the economy. There are important international comparisons too, and it's a topic that's part of ongoing efforts to reorganize work in the 21st century. Ultimately, Sophia wanted to know what's happening at UCL around the idea of menstrual leave and what might change in the near future. Menstrual leave is a perfect example for a topic in STS. It's science and medicine meets policy and sociology. That's what we do! And I really like what Sophia's done here, and I hope you will too. We start with Sophia launching her project.
Earlier this spring, when the Spanish cabinet approved the suggestion that people suffering from severe symptoms associated with menstruation should be allowed to take 3 paid days off per month in menstrual leave, it was the first time I was introduced to this concept. My name is Sophia, and I am someone that prides myself on having an interest in female health and progress related to it, and I still wasn't aware this was even a thing. So I'm going to assume that some of you are as clueless right now as I was a couple of weeks ago. But not to worry, if you stick around with me for the next 30 minutes or so, I'll tell you all about what menstrual leave is and why it's important, why it can be surprisingly controversial and debated, and how on earth it has anything to do with STS. Started, let's remind ourselves that menstruation does not have a gender. Trans men, non-binary individuals, and anyone else who has a uterus and has gone through female puberty will most likely have some sort of menstruation symptoms. In addition, non-cis menstruators are often forgotten about in these conversations. So if at any point during this podcast me or anyone I interview slips up and say women or female, just know that in this, we are including everyone who is menstruating. First of all, menstrual leave is not a new concept. It was introduced as early as 100 years ago in the 1920s in the Soviet Union. At that time, the policy was put in place to protect the female reproductive abilities and make sure that female workers would not exhaust themselves so they could bring forth a new healthy generation. In the late 1940s, after 20 years of debate, Japan introduced a menstrual leave policy with a similar motivation. And if you think this whole taking time off work to protect your reproductive abilities thing is a bit of a weird concept, hold on to that thought, because we're going to get back to it very soon. Today, menstrual leave policies exist in a number of countries across the world, including Japan, as mentioned, South Korea, China, Taiwan, Indonesia, India, but currently only in the public sector, Zambia, and Mexico. In 2017, the introduction of a menstrual leave policy was suggested in Italy, but it was not approved in Parliament, making Spain the first European country to adopt the policy when they did so in May of 2022. On top of this, a handful of companies have chosen to grant their employees menstrual leave across the world, even in countries where it's not mandatory. Most of the policies grant female workers 1 or 2 days per month of extra leave on top of their sick leave, and it being paid or unpaid varies from country to country and company to company. There's not much public data on how well the laws about menstrual leave are actually being followed or how useful employees are finding them, but some research suggests that women in countries where it's enforced on a national level may actually be avoiding using their menstrual leaves. Something that we will talk more about in the later half of this programme. So why would someone need time off from work while they're on their period? Well, let's start with that fertility question. And the CDC does say that working overly long hours or working night shifts might be related to menstrual disorders, miscarriages, and preterm birth. And this is because it messes with your circadian rhythm, your normal sleep hours, which in turn regulates your menstrual cycle and your pregnancy hormones. And this was confirmed as late as last year by a Korean study saying that working long hours does indeed affect fertility, especially in young women. However, working normal hours just while you're on your period doesn't seem to have an effect on your fertility. And the idea that it would could probably stem from an old idea that reproduction is the only purpose in a woman's life. But there are also a range of other reasons as to why someone would want to take time off while they're on their period. Just a regular period affecting almost everyone with a uterus will come with bleeding, of course, often cramping, sore boobs, irritability, depression, fatigue, headaches. And for a lot of people, menstruation can be irregular, meaning that the periods can be longer, heavier, or unpredictable, or even more painful. There's also a range of menstrual disorders, and some of the more known may be premenstrual syndrome and premenstrual dysphoric disorder. And these will have the patients feeling depressed, irritable, having mood swings, even feeling dysphoric, combined with severe somatic pain in the days leading up to a period as well. And it turns out that many of the companies that have independently adopted a menstrual leave policy often boast very positive reactions from their employees. For example, in an article with the Sydney Morning Herald, Mary Crooks, who is the executive director of the Victorian Women's Trust, said that a few years after the implementation of the policy, employees feel more supported in their workplace as productive workers and women, and they feel more appreciation for their organisation to have taken this step. Earlier this spring, Susan Margaret Correa told the Washington Post that since the American software company Novento that she works for has introduced 1 day of menstrual leave per month, workers are feeling heard and more comfortable. And these are just two of a number of similar positive reports. And by the way, these articles and every other piece of literature that I'll be citing in this episode can be found in the bibliography in the show notes. Despite all of these positives, some workplaces choose to not adopt a menstrual leave policy. For example, UCL. I spoke to Lauren Ray.
Hello, my name is Lauren Ray, and I'm Head of Employment Policy at UCL.
And she told me a bit about why.
If I was employed at UCL right now, and every month I got such excruciating pains from my period that I felt that I couldn't work for maybe 1 or 2 days, what would be the options for me then? What would I be advised to do?
You would take sickness absence. So you would call in sick to your line manager, tell them why you couldn't work that day. It would then get recorded on our sickness absence system with the reason. I recall it's under the category of gynecological problems, and that would get recorded.
Has there ever been any conversations about maybe introducing a menstrual leave policy at UCL?
No, there hasn't.
When I asked her why, Lauren gave me a range of reasons that are actually quite common when asking company leads who have chosen to not introduce a menstrual leave policy. For example, she was concerned about discriminating against other members of staff.
Would be some people who would argue that it is sex discrimination, because the majority of people who will be able to take menstruation leave are women, and there could be a challenge under disability discrimination, that you are favouring one type of long-term condition for special treatment over other disabilities and long-term conditions.
We also spoke about whether the menstrual leave would be paid or not, which, mind you, is not a given, and Lauren highlighted what implications that would have both for the individuals and for the institution.
So if you're not paying people to take menstrual leave, why would women want to take it? I would rather take sickness absence, because at UCL we give people full pay on sickness absence. If we then extend that to women who are taking menstrual leave, then yes, the cost to the organisation will be phenomenal.
Interestingly enough, she also mentions that, at least from her staff and what she's seen, there doesn't seem to be a need for a menstrual leave.
It's never come to my attention that menstruation is a big sickness absence reason. You know, I would say many women go through menstruation without issues, or they seek help for their issues and therefore it is manageable. There is a way to support all of our members of staff, taking into account diversity and different needs, without introducing this particular policy. We also have support networks for our staff. So we have disabled staff networks. We have a menopause network. We have, you know, parents and carers networks. We have black staff networks. So we try and put in as many resources as possible to support staff. We are also talking about perhaps bringing in some menstruation guidance as well.
It should be becoming clear now that menstrual leave policies are not as straightforward as they may seem. And after the break, we're going to dig deeper into some of the social structures that can make menstrual leave do more harm than good. You're listening to We Are STS, and we'll be back soon.
What do I like about STS is that STS is a super small department. In those larger departments, you are really hard to get a chance to bond with everybody in the department. But in STS, it almost felt like we had this privilege of getting extra attention from all our professors and classmates and schoolmates.
Hey, here's a thought. Maybe you want to move into science communication as a career. If that's the case, have a look at our brand new master's degree in science communication. It's a mix of practical and theoretical. We're bringing in industry professionals to keep us on the cutting edge, and we're mixing together familiar stuff in communication, like broadcasting, journalism, and publishing, with other key parts of the subject, such as communication for policy and campaigning, engagement to boost marginalized voices, and communications work in industry. We're packing a lot in, so give it a look online. We have open days coming up soon, so you can meet staff and ask your questions.
Welcome back. You're listening to We Are STS. My name is Sophia, and we're talking about menstrual leave. Right before we left, Lauren Ray told us some of the reasons for why UCL doesn't have a menstrual leave policy. And now we're going to dwell into some of the more theoretical and feminist arguments against a menstrual leave policy. And to help me with that, I called up Dr. Shima Tarek.
So my name is Shima Tarek. I'm a clinical academic based at the Institute for Global Health at UCL. I'm also a doctor, so I work as a consultant in HIV and sexual health.
When researchers talk about menstrual leave, they often mention that we need to consider the cultural context of menstruation. We live in a world where menstruation is stigmatized, but what does that mean?
There's all this awkwardness about periods. We just don't want to engage with the reality of women's bodies. They're just bodily functions, but they sadly are not just bodily functions. They have social meaning and cultural meaning, which is what makes it awkward and stigmatizing. I think there's something very culturally powerful about periods because it brings together a lot of quite potent things. So when a woman starts having periods, it signifies her potential to be able to have a baby. Well, I should say when a person starts having a period, sorry. It sort of signifies, you know, I think the transition from being a child to being a sexual individual, it in many cultures is the time when women's or people's bodies start getting much more policed, because reproduction and the potential to have children becomes a sort of political and cultural of cultural and political interest, and often women are subjected to patriarchal norms to try and control their reproduction.
So menstruation is a sign of sexuality and reproductive ability, which are both things that the patriarchy wants to control, which makes them stigmatized and a bit awkward to talk about. But that's also not the only thing.
Periods of blood. Blood, you know, is deeply symbolic.
So blood holds a lot of cultural value, and it's something we sometimes see as a bit dirty. We'd rather not want it on our clothes, and we don't want to see it on someone else's. So with all this in mind, some people worry that the further introduction of menstrual leave will enhance these ideas that periods are dirty, that they should be hidden and controlled, and that they are inappropriate for the workplace. With the stigmatization of menstruation comes a culture of non-disclosure. If you're on your period, you're not meant to tell anyone. That's not something someone else needs to know. However, the whole idea of a menstrual leave policy goes strictly against this culture, because if you're meant to take time off while on your period, at least your manager is going to have to know that you are bleeding. And this can be problematic, as forced menstrual disclosure can lead to harassment and objectification. And it is serious. In some countries, such as China and South Korea, women have been reported to refuse to use their menstrual leave because they don't want to report to a male boss that they're bleeding, or because they don't want to feed into stereotypes about women being weak and unproductive. Forced menstrual disclosure is, however, arguably even worse for queer workers. If a non-cis menstruator has to take time off, they don't only need to disclose their menstrual status, but may also have to unwillingly disclose their gender identity. Exposing someone's gender identity against their will is not only an invasion of their privacy, but it could also lead to severe harassment and even violence. Important to note, however, is that this would only occur if a policy was so fair as to include non-cis menstruators as well, which a lot of the state-mandated policies don't seem to do right now. So we're starting to see how the introduction of menstrual leave policies kind of clashes with the culture we have around menstruation itself. But we're not done yet talking about social implications of menstruation, because being on your period is not only stigmatized, it's also medicalized. And I hear you thinking, medicalized? Sophia, what does that mean? Well, here's Shima to help us out again.
Started being discussed sort of in the 60s and 70s, sort of 60s, 70s feminism. It was a reclaiming of the female body and the female expertise, thinking about, you know, childbirth is a natural process. It doesn't have to be that a woman or sort of birthing parent is made to lie in a bed in a position that actually is unnatural and not conducive to giving birth, that you know, that actually is an exercise of power, because it makes it easier for the medical team to manage childbirth, but not easier for the birthing parent to give birth.
So we're specifically talking about the medicalization of female or non-male bodies here. And the idea is, as Shima said, that the medical institution, as part of patriarchy, is putting control on people with non-male bodies by telling them that things that naturally happen to their bodies are actually illnesses that need medical intervention, for example, childbirth. So instead of letting these natural phenomena just happen, the medical institution says, no, what's happening to you is wrong, and here's the solution to it.
And the same critique has been levelled with periods. So, you know, menstruation is a physiological normal process, by saying that it's something that needs to be controlled and treated, either by giving a woman or a person a coil, a sort of a hormonal coil, or telling them to take a back-to-back contraceptive pill to stop having periods. It's this sort of creation of this sanitized, clean, sort of intact, boundaried, you know, person.
The concern is that through introducing a leave that is very similar to sick leave, but specifically for menstruation, these ideas that menstruation is something that is an illness or needs to be handled or kept away from the workplace will be reinforced. However, medicalization, especially of menstruation, is not only a bad thing. It has provided people with a range of solutions to what can be quite severe health issues. For example, hormonal contraception can completely stop or at least decrease symptoms of menstruation. We now know that you can take normal painkillers for cramps, and pads and tampons help us discard discharge in a way that isn't very messy and gets everywhere. Today, many individuals can manage their periods in a way that suits them, and that is partly thanks to medicalization. Because of all these options, some people argue that women and other people that menstruate have a responsibility to handle their symptoms, especially in the workplace, to make sure that they can remain productive. Here's Lauren again.
I think it's also taking away responsibility from women for actually managing their condition. So we know that for some, there are many solutions for heavy periods and painful periods. And if women just think they can take 1 or 2 days off a month, every month, then there's no incentive for them to actually seek medical help and support for their condition.
But this is about more than just being productive in the workplace. Critics worry that the further introduction of a menstrual leave could affect the way that women are employed and paid in the workplace, making them less desirable on the work market since they require more paid leave. Lauren told me that here in the UK, that would be somewhat stopped because of the Equal Rights Act, but she still thinks there's some reason to the concern.
I think if it was introduced, menstruation leave, it almost gives women a pass, you know, to take 1 or 2 days off every month as though this is the norm and this is accepted. And yes, I do think that that could have a negative connotation on their career prospects.
Okay, so we seem to have come to a point where there's a lot of risks about further introducing a menstrual leave, and where it looks like it could do more harm than good for women and other menstruators socially if it was further introduced. So why would we need a menstrual leave? Why are some people still arguing for it? Well, according to Shima, it's for those people that can't take responsibility for their periods. Those who have their adverse menstruation experiences. Those people for whom menstruation is terrible.
I do see people suffering as a result of these normal physiological processes. And I think you can have both of those things. You can hold the thought that this is normal and this is physiological and it's not to be pathologized, it's not a disease, but that for some people, periods can be disabling.
And she thinks, and she's not alone in this, that just being better at giving people sick leave isn't enough, and that the introduction of menstrual leave is a step towards better gender equality in the workplace.
I'm a big supporter of menstrual leave. I think, you know, if cisgendered men had periods every month that could be as painful as having a heart attack, this would already be part of daily life. You know, we would have incorporated this many years ago.
We talked about this fear of being perceived as weak if you have to take menstrual leave and it being used negatively against you in the workspace. And she seemed to have a very positive mindset about it, although she did preface with saying that maybe she was thinking a bit naively. I'll let you be the judge of that.
But when people take sick leave, we don't necessarily think, oh, they're weak because they've taken some time off because they've got flu, or, you know, how many people have taken time off because they've had COVID in the past 2 years? And we've not said, wow, they're really weak for, you know, being off with COVID.
If menstrual leave policies are to be further introduced, say here in the UK, I think it has to be done in a way where no one feels overruled. The people like those that Lauren talk about that are maybe worried about being dragged down by negative connotations or don't feel like they need to take menstrual leave and that they can manage their periods on their own, they also need to be respected. And with all the social and cultural structures already in place, creating that environment where no one feels disrespected may feel a bit daunting and difficult.
How do you work to create an environment where people who want it can feel safe in wanting it, and people that don't want it don't feel like they're kind of dragged along into something?
We already have that environment when we think about maternity leave. So if you think about parental leave, there are many, many ways of doing that. Some people may take 3 months, some people may take 6 months, some people may take the full 12 months, some people go part-time, some people share the parental leave with their partner. There's all sorts of things that you decide to do that work for you individually. So we have that in place. We know how to do this flexibly and to respect someone's right to choose how to work. And I think we have to exercise that same sort of level of choice when it comes to menstrual leave. Have it there on the table as an option and say, you know, it's here if you need it, but you don't have to take it.
Although I would argue that maybe there's some social structures surrounding parental leave as well still remaining. She raises an important point here. Maybe I'm the cynical one. Maybe we are more able to be accommodating than we think. So, what have we learned? Well, menstrual leave, the concept of giving women, or menstruators, a couple of extra days off from work per month to manage their symptoms has been around for at least 100 years. It was introduced as a way to protect female fertility and the health of future generations, and in some countries where it's state mandated, that is still the main motivation. Some people may very well need to take time off work while on their period, as menstruating can be debilitating in many ways. And some people argue that a further introduction of a menstrual leave is an important step towards gender equality. Others worry that because of the social structures that exist around periods today, a menstrual leave could potentially do more harm than good for menstruators in the workspace. On top of this, there's a range of reasons why the introduction of a menstrual leave can be a tricky decision for a company, including staff discrimination, costs, and productivity. I'm personally not sure what I think about menstrual leave yet. I don't have a yes or no for you. And mind you that what I've told here is not the full story. There's so much more nuance out there. I will be reading more, and I encourage you to do the same. All of my resources for this episode will be listed in the show notes, and that could be a good start. One thing I do know for sure, however. Remember at the start when I promised to explain how all of this has anything to do with STS? Well, one thing that I think has been made clear is that policy and research, maybe especially when related to health, do not exist in vacuums. There are so many social and cultural structures affecting them both, and it's important to be aware of and understand these structures and how they interact with whatever you're trying to implement or create. And that, my friends, is STS, if you ask me.
See, I told you folks, what a great project. Well done, Sophia. You're setting a high standard for next year's group in the STS newsroom. Before we go, let me thank Sophia Sancho for her project, and thanks to the others in the STS newsroom for their help along the way. You're going to hear from them too later on in the summer. I think all their work has been real journalism. A lot of hard work, a lot of research, and a lot of skills development along the way. Also, a big thanks to the interviewees. That includes Ms. Lauren Rhea and Dr. Shima Tariq. Sophia has given me lots of additional information, which I've placed in the show notes. Music today included two pieces, Rollin' at Five by Kevin MacLeod. That's available on the website filmmusic.io. And Cool Jazzy Brass and Vibraphone by M33 Project. That's available on the website freemusicarchive.org. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you want to find out more about the show, listen to past episodes, or give us some feedback, just visit us online. Here's the address, so write this down. It's ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast. That's it for today, everybody. Thanks for coming along, and we'll have another episode ready soon. In fact, we have more student episodes from the STS newsroom in the works right now. It's all very exciting. Until then, or until next time, everybody, just remember that together we are STS. You've been listening to We Are STS. It's a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe to the show and join us online. The address, ucl.ac.uk/STS/podcast.